Well, good afternoon and good morning, everyone. My name is Paul Weber, and it is my distinct honor to welcome you to the second Voices of Chica teleclass of 2009. For those who are joining this teleclass from outside of Canada, Chica stands for the Community and Hospital Infection Control Association, which is Canada's national association of infection prevention and control professionals. And at present, I believe there are approximately 1,600 intelligent and attractive folk who are paid-up members of Chica from Canada and from around the globe. Now, we have with us today a few of those very distinguished members who will report on their field of expertise. But before we get to that, I'd like to acknowledge the sponsorship support of some fine companies. You'll see their logos on slide number 2. Thanks very much to Virox Technologies, Arjo Huntley, 3M Canada, Gojo, and Deb Group. To all of you, a very grateful thank you very much. On the next slide is our agenda for today, and we'll move right past that to the next slide, which is the first presentation by Chica President Kathy Munford. Kathy, over to you.
Thank you, Paul. Greetings to everyone online from the Board of Directors. I know we have a lot on the agenda today, so I am just going to cover as short as I can some of the highlights that the Board has been involved with. Chica Canada representatives Ann Bielakowski and Jerry Hansen have been appointed to the Board of Canadian Foundation for Infectious Disease. Chica and CFIT have been working together in the past to develop the National Infectious Disease Day in Ottawa and a media blitz during the 2008 elections. With the unsettled government we have right now and the possibility of another election, it's not likely that a National Infectious Disease Day will go forward this year during Infection Control Week, but the CFID Board will work towards projects of media information, communication with party leaders, public information on MRSA and C. difficile, as well as all the good work that all us ICPs continue to do. Chica's 2009 National Infection Control Week theme this year is The Power of One, Your Role in Infection Control. And you can see the copy of this year's poster on the Chica website under posters. Chica's Rep. Marianne Yetman recently attended the Canadian Patient Safety Institute's strategic planning session in Ottawa. The future goals and objectives of the Canadian Patient Safety Institute were discussed in alignment with the goals of the member organizations, including Chica Canada. Going on to some of the education things that we have been involved with, Chica has developed the policies regarding the endorsement of the basic ICP education. This was in response to the request from the educational institutions, public and private, for endorsements of on-site and distance learning. So, as you know, we put a call out for members for the review committee, and we now have a group that have been appointed to review all the applications for endorsement. The 2009 Education Conference was held in St. John's, Newfoundland. It was a big success despite the H1N1 occurring just before the conference. We are very fortunate that registrations canceled due to travel restrictions were replaced by new registrants from those who had support of their institutions and attended this important educational opportunity. In response to the H1N1 crisis, there was a special teleconference was arranged with key experts from across Canada, and they gave an update of the current Canadian situation. And a big thanks goes out to the Newfoundland Labrador chapter, who showed all of us a really good time and a good party in Newfoundland. At the conference, we were able to award the first CIC Chapter Achievement Award, which is hosted by CICA Canada, and we were happy to present it to CICA British Columbia. And this will be an annual award done at our conference. Our next conference will be in 2010 in Vancouver, and we'd like to invite all people from across the country and around the world to join us in Vancouver in May 29th to June 3rd at the Sheridan Wall Vancouver, or the Sheridan Vancouver Wall Center. The program's on the website, and you'll be hearing more about it in a few minutes from Marion, if she's on the line, or
I
from
am.
Jerry. With sponsorship from BD Canada, CICA has hosted a series of MRSA roadshows and webinars in 2008 and 2009. The next webinar will be held here in my town of Victoria, British Columbia. The date, I believe, is going to be November 10th. And so that will allow people who are coming can spend the extra day on the 11th for travel. Highlights will include prevention and management of H1N1, environment cleaning, CRBSIs, prevention and management of C. diff, and positive deviants. I'm happy to say that our revised bylaws that were presented at the conference have received ministerial assent in July. Besides revisions to satisfy new corporations, the New Corporations Canada legislation, and simplify the wording and intent of articles. And I believe that is most of what has been happening. Also, a number of us just got back from the IPS conference in England, where we had a great time. They've put on a really good conference, and we have invited many of those people to come and join us at our conferences. Now, if there's any questions?
Kathy, you didn't mention the ratification of the new strategic plan.
Oh, yes, and the strategic plan was ratified at our, we had a two-day strategic planning session at the 2009 conference. The results was a development of the 2010 to 2015 strategic plan containing a new vision, mission, and value statement, as well as objectives for the 2010. All this can be found on the website, and these were ratified at the conference by the membership.
Kathy, did you mention that there was an award at the conference? I missed that part, but I thought it was the chapter award, and if that was the case, then it was Handic that won the chapter award, so I'm not sure if I just missed the award that you announced.
I announced the CIC award.
Okay.
Which was the BC, not the Handic Award.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
It's Jerry. The second award being referred to is the 3M Chapter Achievement Award, and indeed Handic was the winner this year.
Thanks, Jerry.
Hi, Paul. It's Bruce here. Kathy, I was wondering, the board positions that are becoming vacant, have you got nominees for that? Are you still calling for nominees? And you would want to remind people about that?
The board positions, we have two of those new positions filled. The third one is still in process, Jerry?
Yes, we're still under discussions with a potential candidate. But the position of Director of Standards and Guidelines will be filled by Dr. Jennifer Grant from Vancouver General Hospital. And Karen Klinker has been reappointed for her second term as Director of Programs and Projects.
Kathy, I just wondered about the BD roadshow that is planned for Victoria. Is that in combination with your chapter meeting?
No, it's not. This will be separate from our chapter.
But we'll coincide with it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. Next on the agenda is Maren Yetman, past president, to speak on the 2010 conference in Vancouver. Maren.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Paul. And yes, indeed, we're well underway now with the plans for the 2010 conference in Vancouver. And as Kathy said, the Olympics will be held in BC in February 2010, so there'll still be a lot of excitement in that city from the Olympics, so it's another reason to attend, but the conference itself will be one of the main reasons for people to go. And it's our theme is Golden Opportunities, in keeping with the Olympic theme, Soaring to New Heights. And so we will have the meetings, the Board of Directors meeting will be on to start off the week, and then there will be board committee meetings throughout the week, and there the times and the schedules of these meetings will be announced. Standards and guidelines, programs and projects, finance, membership, government and public affairs, and a new industry relations committee meeting, and also the Canadian Journal of Infection Control meetings. So they will be all held throughout the week. The special interest groups will be held on Saturday, on May 29th, and we have 10 in total now. The dialysis, long-term care, mental health, pediatrics, and oncology, which have been special interest groups of CHICA Canada for many years. And then we have a lot of new interest groups that have formed over the past few years. Healthcare facility and design and construction, pre-hospital first responders, surveillance and applied epidemiology, and community health care. Last year, we also formed the Network of Networks, which Bruce is going to speak about this afternoon. And so all of those meetings will be held on Saturday. And hopefully that has been working for the past couple of years, allowing people to attend the different meetings rather than have so many meetings throughout the conference sessions. On Friday, May 28th, the chapter presidents will be having their meeting, an all-day meeting. And then to get the conference started and to recognize all of the participants coming from different parts of the world and across Canada, CHICA BC has scheduled a meet and greet on Sunday, May 30th. After that meet and greet, there will also be an international attendees reception starting at 6:30 that evening. And on Monday morning, bright and early, and it's great if you would plan for that now, because our IFIC run, the run for the International Federation of Infection Control, and this is something CHICA Canada started a few years back, and we ask our members to donate funds to sponsor ICPs in underdeveloped countries or countries that can't afford to send their ICPs to conferences. So we developed, CHICA Canada was instrumental in forming this IFIC run a few years back, and it has been a great success. That will be held on Monday morning, May 31st, and it's bright and early, probably about 6:30 a.m. But if you don't really want to get up that early, you can support it by sponsoring someone else, and we really would recommend you to do that. On Monday evening, we have the official opening ceremonies and opening receptions, and that's usually quite exciting, and Jerry always comes up with some innovative event for that. So then on Sunday, May 30th, we have the Practitioners Forum, which is a full day for novice practitioners and advanced practitioners. Two different educational sessions. And on day for the novice practitioners, it is recommended for practitioners with less than 2 years' experience. And this year, although the complete program hasn't been finalized, some of the things that have been recommended is scenarios, actual real-life scenarios, things that happen, and microbiology by our favorite bug, and Jim Garcia has always presented this and has been an all-time favorite. Maybe the routine practices and additional precautions tools, which have been developed by Health Canada or Public Health Agency of Canada, an overview of these, and certainly another very popular is the outbreak session. For the advanced practitioner, the topics that are included in that day include understanding epidemiology, reading the literature, developing champions, your personal strategic plan, and real-life experiences. And Dr. John Amble from Winnipeg and Molly Blake are presenting that session, so that should be very exciting. On our pre-conference day, which is on Monday, May 31st, there are two full-day sessions, one devoted to cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization, and one to community health issues. So for the cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization, include such topics as environmental cleaning, high-level disinfection, audits of environmental cleaning and audits of reprocessing, DIN requirements, occupational health aspects, and topic titled Dirt Can't Be Sterilized. And in the community health session, which is also a full day, as I said, personal services, immunization, what's new, cleaning in community settings, ethics and privacy as they relate to community settings, AROs in the community, and infection prevention and control in alternate settings such as in prisons or with drug population, etc. So that should be a very exciting day for us. And then the official start of the conference on June 1st with our keynote speaker, Marnie McBeam. And Marnie is a Olympian, and she is one of one Canadian who has won three gold medals. And she will be discussing such things as performing under pressure, and we've all can understand that, sharing goal-setting techniques, and hopefully giving us a framework for success. Continuing on that morning, we will have a global focus in the morning for the plenary sessions with the International Infection Prevention and Control Projects, International Health Regulations Review, and International Mentors, how we can support them. In the afternoon, there will be concurrent sessions, and some topics include antibiotic-resistant organisms, healthcare facility construction, and a QI, LEAP versus Six Sigma. Then on Wednesday, we'll have the Strut Your Stuff breakfast with Michael Gardam. He's our new physician director, and he's gotten quite popular on CBC since H1N1 being interviewed all of the time, so stay tuned for that one. And in the plenary session that day, we will have such topics as human factors, culture changes, and going green versus best practices. And Wednesday afternoon, we have some concurrent sessions also. And on Thursday, back by popular demand, is the session I Thought You'd Never Ask, and we hope that people would submit scenarios for that particular session, things that they have encountered in their work setting, questions they've been asked about particular practices, etc. And our closing speaker is Yvonne Camus. So it's not all work, though, at this conference. We do have some social events planned. And the first on Tuesday evening, we have a sightseeing tour of Vancouver, which should be quite exciting, especially for first-time visitors to the city of Vancouver. On Wednesday evening, we have a special event, and the BC are trying to keep up with Newfoundland Labrador, and they are organizing a special sock hop with the Timber Time Benders, interactive rock and roll band. And then on Thursday night, if people are still visiting the city, a dinner cruise is being organized. So it should It comes a great conference with lots of new information for people and lots of refreshers for on older topics. So we hope that you will all attend. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marianne. I'm going to take the phones off of mute again for just a moment. Again, if you have a question, please jump right in. Does anyone have a question for Marianne on her presentation or on the conference coming up in June 2010?
Paul, Bruce again, just wanted to note in the slide deck there, the call for abstracts, just to remind people about that and the deadline of February 26, 2010.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks so much, Bruce. That is a good reminder.
No worries.
Thank you very much, Marianne. I'd like to make one comment. At the British conference last week, there's a large company who looks after the administration of the Infection Prevention Society and looks after their conference. They have lots of people working for them. And in Canada, we have Jerry. And Jerry, I think, does as much or more work than this large company that looks after the IPS for a much bigger organization. And so I'm very proud that we have her with us, and I think she's worth every cent of the $300 a year that we pay her.
Thanks, Paul.
Our next presenter, standing in for Karen Klinker for programs and projects to speak on the update on the Chica audit tool, is Ann Bialikowski. Ann.
Thanks, Paul. Yes, Karen and I wanted to provide an update on behalf of the team because we did present at the Chica conference, and we are a little bit behind on our timelines, but I think we're moving along really nicely. And one of the things that we wanted to do was we wanted to bring out the toolkit in its entirety, and as we've moved through the process, we realized that getting through all the approval stages, that it was going to take us longer than we had thought to do that. So instead, what we're going to be doing is breaking out bundles of audit tools so that they are out there and available to the different to all of the Chica members. For a little while there, standards and guidelines wasn't meeting, and that held us up a little bit because all of the tools are going to standards and guidelines for final approval or for approval and review. At the conference in May, we are very grateful to have Claire Berry step up to temporarily chair that committee and meet with us on a regular basis with the working group for the audit tools and with the standards and guidelines committee, and they have reviewed the tools. One of the other pieces that we've added in that had previously we weren't going to do, but we have decided to do this, and that is to send out the audits to wider stakeholder review, so beyond the standards and guidelines. If there are audit tools that apply to other organizations, and there's one coming out in this bundle, for example, surgical scrub, we felt that it would be suitable to go to ORNAC, so it will go out to that group as well as other key stakeholder groups like the chapter presidents. So at the moment, the audit toolkit committee is the same. There have been no changes. It's myself, Karen Klinker, and Mary LeBlanc has been working with us as the writer, and Shirley McDonald. We will see a change in the near future where we're just going to go down to three members, and Shirley has agreed to take on a dual role because the project has gone on longer than we expected. So Shirley's going to take on a dual role of doing writer and graphics. The list of the current list is in the slide deck, and there are some the important points that I wanted to point out were there is a toolkit introduction and guidelines for using them, as well as an evaluation form. So I would ask all of those people that have agreed to look at the tools that they read the introduction and also the guidelines, because they inform the content of a lot of the tools that are out there. So we have sent them out to the chapter presidents. We do encourage them to review. That review needs to be in by the end of the week. What we'd like to do is get this bundle of tools out to our chapter members or all of our members by Infection Control Week. So There's PPE and additional precautions and client-patient-resident service units, and there are a couple for outbreaks and surgical scrub, as well as housekeeping supply room and unit kitchen. So we're currently working on routine practices. It is almost done, and it will be going shortly to standards and guidelines for review. And then once those are ready, we will launch the website. We're very excited about it. The tools have definitely come a long way from the very beginning when we first started working on them. We think they're quality tools, but we do invite all of our members to provide feedback. And sometimes it's painful because they're like our babies, and we feel very, very protective of them, but we've got some wonderful, wonderful feedback and some really good guidance all along the way, and we've incorporated that in the tool, and they just keep getting better and better. So thank you to everybody who has participated so far and provided feedback, and just a reminder to all of those of you who have recently received as the next wave of stakeholders to please get your feedback in by the end of the week to Shirley so she can compile it.
And it's Jerry. If I might interject, once the tools have gone through the review process and are posted for members to use, there will be an audit comment form with the tools so that once the tools are actually used in practice, there might be comment and improvement still to be made. So even though review of these tools has not gone out to our 1,600 members, they have gone out to chapter presidents and other colleagues, but each individual member, after using the tool, will have an opportunity for input into the effectiveness of the tool.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jerry, for that. And in fact, we do have a couple of members who have volunteered to take the tools and use them. So we'll really see where the rubber hits the road and where the improvements could be made in terms of functionality. So yes, absolutely. Everybody will have an opportunity to provide feedback at an ongoing basis. So they really will be evergreen documents. Thank you, Jerry, for that.
And I did notice in one of the slides that you provided, it says that the tools will be provided online to CHICA members at no cost. And then in another slide, there's a cost mentioned, presumably for a printed version. Is there a difference between the two different tools, or are we talking about different things?
No, they're exactly the same tool. And the reason, just because of the cost of the printing, that's why we are encouraging our members to go in and use them online and print them from online rather than having the entire, the whole copy printed and sent to them. So that's what they're free if they access them online, and there's a cost if they order a printed manual.
It's Jerry again. It's also available to non-members at a fee.
Thank you very much. That's obviously a good benefit of membership. Thank you very much, Anne, for that presentation on behalf of Karen and your group. And we'll move on to Bruce Gamage from the Provincial Infection Control Network of BC, who will speak on a national network of networks. Bruce.
All right. Thanks, Paul. So we can go past the picture, the lovely picture of me. I think I still kind of look like that. So what this is about is... I'll just give you a little bit of history first on the slide, and it says history. The Provincial Infection Control Network of BC was formed back in 2005, and really it was a result of the Campbell Report post-SARS that we wanted to have a provincial body that would maximize coordination and integration around infection prevention and control activities in the province. And when we started looking at this and forming this group, we connected with Shirley Payton from PHAC, and what Shirley said was, well, gee, you know, there's people all from all across the country who are doing similar things that PICNET is doing, and what, you know, we really should try to connect all of those groups and also connect them with PHAC so that there could be some coordination and sharing between all of these different provincial programs across the country. And so we formed a group, and we called it the National Network of Networks. And this group has met four times, and at the last two CHICA conferences, CHICA has provided us with the space so that we could all get together and discuss sort of what issues are going on in the provinces and how, in terms of nationally, they could tie in. And at the last meeting at the CHICA conference in May in St. John's, it was suggested that since this group was needing a home, and really we were closely tied in with the CHICA memberships, that it would make the most sense for this group actually to become a CHICA interest group. And so at the meeting we discussed this, and we created a terms of reference and so forth, and have submitted that to CHICA to become an interest group. So if you look under the slide under members, these are the folks who are actually members of our Network of Networks group. You can see Marion's on there, Patsy from Nova Scotia, Stacy from PEI and Gail, Tracy Newton from New Brunswick, Ramona and Madeline from Quebec, Colleen Nisbet from Ontario, Claire Berry and Erica Bontovics and Liz Van Horn, also all from Ontario. Genevieve Thompson from Manitoba, Colleen Lambert from Saskatchewan, Bernice Heinrichs from Alberta, myself and Joanne Archer from BC, and then we have Shirley from PHAC, and then Anne joined us last year as representative from CHICA, as the CHICA president-elect. So this group has people from all across the country, representatives from each province, so it does fit well under the idea of being an interest group. So really, I listed out the goals of this group, but what they are is basically to create a sustainable mechanism for these people who are in provincial positions within their provinces to get together a couple of times of the year formally to have meetings and to share what kind of initiatives and so forth are going on in the province. And really to try to avoid recreating the wheel, because we really all acknowledge that all of the provinces are dealing with similar issues, specifically right now dealing with all of the H1N1 issues. And what this group has really become is a communications vehicle. And we all email back and forth several times weekly in the last little while around H1N1 issues, just to share what's going on in each province, how are people applying the PHAC guidance around H1N1, what are the differences, and why are people doing what they're doing. So really to disseminate information and to share. And then as well, if you go to the second page in terms of the goals of this, is all of the provinces have recently set up mechanisms for looking at surveillance for healthcare-associated infections, and really to work towards standardization of case definitions, standardization of surveillance methodology, and to share what's going on in each province, work towards harmonization and consistency, and really to promote a way that we can all continue to share and communicate. And I think, this, as I said, this really does fall well under CHICA's mandate. So to tie this group in with CHICA and to share what we're doing, look at whether we need to add membership to this group from different CHICA members, and to really explore that, I think, again, bringing this under the CHICA envelope has been a really good move for us. For this group, myself and Patsy Rodding are the current co-chairs of this group. And so definitely if anybody has any questions or would like to approach this group, please feel free to to contact me or Patsy if there's any issues that you want to bring to this group or you'd like us to discuss, or and we would welcome that. Thanks very much.
Thanks to you, Bruce. I'll again, if you have questions for Bruce that you don't want to email to him that you'd like to address right away, please do so right now.
I just a quick question. In the past, it wasn't an interest group, but in the past, this particular group was by invitation only, or it was a limited. There were limited attendance. Or selected attendance at the meetings, and I guess now if it moves into the interest group, then it will be the same as other interest groups, that it would be open and whoever would choose to go to the meeting would be welcome at the national conference. Is that how you foresee it working?
I certainly think that would apply, Anne. I think that probably in terms of having specific representatives from the provinces, and if we were looking at voting membership, those folks would be the people who would have voting rights at the meetings. But in terms of anybody from anywhere attending these meetings, that they would be welcome at the Chica conferences for sure.
Mm-hmm. I definitely see that this particular interest grow to be how we turn it into an interest day at the conference, that because of the issues that come up at the group that are of national quality or national agendas, that there's some real interest, and I think you could turn it into a half day, no problem.
Okay.
So food for thought.
Thanks, Anne.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Anne. And Bruce, is there another question for Bruce?
Bruce, it's Jerry. Prior to this, the Network of Networks had met a few times a year. Was there any funding from FAC for that, or did the networks fund their own meeting, and who paid for the long-distance charges, that sort of thing? Was there any funding for it?
There has been no funding coming from FAC. Currently, this whole initiative has been funded by PICNET, which, again, given the current economic climate, that could be a challenge for us to keep sponsoring this group. We have been paying for take that back. A couple of the meetings that we had, we did use a PHAC conference line. And for the other meetings, we've used the PICNET conference line. So, but at the actual Chica meetings, PICNET has been a sponsored the meetings at the Chica conference.
Great. We'll move along. Now, a few weeks ago, we had a teleclass on influenza vaccination among healthcare workers, and it was a very very good teleclass. The person who spoke was an American presenter who presented things, obviously, from an American standpoint. And a great many of our Canadian participants in that teleclass emailed me afterward to say that some of the things that were promoted on that teleclass were contrary to what the guidelines are in Canada. And we should have somebody, and in most cases, that recommendation was Dr. Bonnie Henry, to give the Canadian perspective on influenza management. So Dr. Henry was very gracious to join us for the second half of this teleclass to give a presentation on that very topic. And so I'm very grateful, Bonnie, that you've been able to join us. Thank you very much, and I'll turn it over to you.
Hi, everybody, and I'm sorry, I didn't put some slides together for this, and what Jerry and Paul and I had talked about was focusing a little bit on what we're hearing in the media right now and the issues that we're facing around vaccination. So I thought I would just give you a short discussion of what's been going on in Canada, how we've been looking at this issue, and who's been looking at it, and a little bit of rationale that may not have come out or that you may not have been aware of around the decisions about immunization. So to start with, way back in April, May, when this whole pandemic H1N1 started, we were already well underway in the production process for the seasonal trivalent influenza vaccine. So one of the questions that I get asked a lot is, why didn't they just put this strain into the seasonal vaccine? Which would be great. Unfortunately, we were well ahead on the process for the seasonal influenza vaccine. It was not possible to do that at that time. And from the public health point of view, we're looking at a variety of issues around immunization. So we had a number of options ahead of us, looking at what a program might be for this coming influenza season here. And much of it depended on what was happening during the summer and what was happening in the influenza season in the Southern Hemisphere. Along with that, there were some regular studies that were ongoing. So there's, for one, a vaccine efficacy study that happens in Ontario, Quebec, and BC every year. So it looks at each of the seasonal strains and their effectiveness at preventing disease in people who present to clinicians' offices for influenza-like illness, and it's based on laboratory testing. So this has been ongoing for about 4 years in BC, 3 years in Ontario and Quebec have been part of it as well. So that study was one thing. And I guess just to go back a tiny bit, the other thing you need to know that not everybody may be aware of is that there has been a sort of process put in place nationally in Canada for reviewing of all these issues. And from someone who went through all of the confusion that happened with communicating between provinces, territories, and the public health agency and the world during SARS, I am quite relieved that this is in place, although it's not perfect. It's a lot better than what we used to have. So what has happened is the deputy ministers of health, including the federal and all the provincial and territorial deputy ministers of health, were meeting daily by teleconference when this whole thing first started. They now meet, they were meeting weekly during the summer by teleconference. They're now meeting twice weekly. So that is kind of neat. It's the first time in certainly in my experience that they've actually done this and coordinated this. And they created what they call a special advisory committee on H1N1 to advise the deputy ministers of health. And that committee is chaired by Dr. Perry Kendall from BC, and Dr. David Butler-Jones, who's, as you know, the Canadian public health officer. And it includes the chief medical officers of health from all the provinces and territories. There's also been put in place a pandemic coordinating committee that has a number of different groups under it. And I, for one, chair the public health measures task group that has come out with the school guidance, guidance for summer camps, all that stuff that you may have seen from the public health agency. There's also an infection prevention and control, infection control expert group that is chaired by Dr. Lynn Johnson, and a number of us sit on that infection control group, and that's the group that's been putting out the Public Health Agency of Canada guidance around infection control. So there is a process, and there's also a pandemic vaccine working group, and the Canadian Immunization Committee, which is an operational committee that exists. It's a provincial, federal provincial territorial committee that have been looking at the issues of vaccines. So the things that we have been considering over the summer were the worst case scenario would be that we would need to offer seasonal influenza vaccine along a regular program, so that differs in every province. Some people have universal programs and some provinces have high-risk programs, plus potentially two doses of pandemic vaccine. So that's the worst case scenario that we were planning for. That was not a decision that those would be, that would be how the vaccine program would roll out. So we have now come to learn from what's been going on, particularly in the Southern Hemisphere, that not surprisingly, the pandemic H1N1 strain is essentially replaced seasonal H1N1 for sure, and most of the other seasonal strains in the Southern Hemisphere, although there is still some circulation of B, which doesn't sort of have the same strain replacement pressure as the A strains, and some circulation of the H3N2. In addition to that, we're starting as well, the studies have shown that it looks like for most people, a single dose of the pandemic vaccine will be enough to provide adequate protection and antibody levels. So that study just came out very recently with the GSK vaccine, which is the one that Canada's had the contract for, which is a huge relief. Looking at it from a logistics point of view, as you can all imagine, giving two doses was something that was going to be a logistical nightmare. So for most people, children under 10, as per seasonal vaccine, when they've never had it before, two doses seem to be necessary, but for the vast majority of us, a single dose seems to be necessary. So we've had a lot of discussion over the last few weeks about what does this mean and what's happening right now in our country that will help drive the decisions about the vaccine programs. There have also been, so I told you about this vaccine effectiveness study that's been ongoing. When they looked at it this year, it seemed to show an association. So people who went to their doctors for assessment for influenza-like illness had a swab taken, a nasopharyngeal swab for influenza. There was a slight increase in, it's a case control study, so what we get is odds ratio. The odds of people who tested positive for pandemic H1N1 having had the seasonal vaccine were higher. So it was somewhere around 1.5 to 2. So this is not a causation effect. It is a case control study, so it is an association. And there were two other case control studies that were looking at people who were laboratory positive with pandemic H1N1 and, again, showed a slight increase in the probability that they had had the seasonal influenza vaccine prior to becoming sick with the pandemic H1N1. The jury is still out about these. So when we see something like this, which is an anomaly and which we don't understand, obviously the most important thing is to have it thoroughly investigated, to try and look at what are the biases or confounders that could be affecting particularly case control studies, which are subject to those things particularly. So what has happened is the lead investigators, who are Gaston Dessert from Quebec and Danuta Skovronsky from here in BC, have put together a compilation of the data from Ontario, Quebec, and BC, and have submitted it to two different groups, an international group of experts in influenza through the WHO, their SAGE group, and a medical journal. So they're limited a little bit in what they can say about it because journals obviously don't want this to be discussed in great detail out in the world prior to publishing it. And there's still some great concerns about, okay, well, what's the biological mechanism behind this and how might this work? So we still don't know the answer to those studies, and quite frankly, I think they'll be most important for us going forward in trying to understand what's going on. I will say that the effect was only seen in young people. Older people, the effect wasn't seen. It was smaller numbers, so that may have been part of it. It may not have been powered enough to see an effect. But the other thing that we're seeing now, all of this was factored into decision-making, and despite what you read in the papers, the studies were not the main focus of why our immunization programs have changed. They were certainly something that we looked at, and especially in the context of safety of immunization and having confidence in immunization, and particularly the influenza immunization for young, healthy people. So what we're seeing now is that the pandemic H1N1 strain is causing disease, has been through the summer in Canada, and has now started to increase in provinces across Canada, particularly in BC, which is not surprising. It happens sometimes that things start here and move east. Sometimes they start in Ontario, Quebec, and move west, but this year we seem to be starting off with having a fair number of community outbreaks and school outbreaks starting here now. But across the country, almost universally, we're seeing the vast majority of influenza being caused by the pandemic H1N1 strain. There are some parts of the country where they're still seeing some disease from H3N2, and we know that H3N2 has been causing most of the severe illness, particularly in elderly people over the last couple of years and people in long-term care homes. So the decision and the discussions that we've had nationally have been about, okay, how do we best protect people from what is circulating now? So for me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to recommend seasonal influenza vaccine to younger people when we know that we're not getting infected with that disease. So I get my influenza vaccine, and then I am no better protected from the H1N1 strain than I was before getting that vaccine. So we're focusing on two different groups. One is the pandemic H1N1 is causing illness mostly in younger people, people born after 1957. People born before 1957 seem to have a higher proportion of them have a protective, cross-protective antibodies, probably from being exposed to a similar virus prior to 1957. So older people, I shouldn't say older, people born before 1957 are in luck. They're probably immune to this pandemic strain. We're seeing them very underrepresented in data across the country and people getting sick with pandemic. So under age 65, we're making the cutoff a little higher than 1957, but under age 65, what's causing illness is the pandemic strain, and that is what we need to focus immunizing people for, and that includes healthcare workers. So our recommendations in most of the country are that healthcare workers should focus on getting the pandemic H1N1 vaccine. People over 65, particularly people living in long-term care home, will benefit from the seasonal vaccine because they're more susceptible to the H3N2 strain, particularly, that's been circulating. And there has been some studies as well that have shown that giving the seasonal vaccine boosts their cross-protective antibody levels. So that may help them even more be protected from the pandemic strain. So most provinces in Canada have deferred the seasonal influenza vaccination. So we have not canceled it, and we're not stopping it completely. What we've said is the epidemiology shows that the pandemic strain is what's causing the disease now. We need to focus on that. And we now know that both vaccines are going to be coming out within a couple of weeks of each other. So the seasonal one will be coming out in mid-October, and the pandemic strain in early November. So we wanted to focus on how to best protect those people who need it from the pandemic strain. We expect, or we think we might see the seasonal strain start to circulate later in the year as they have for the last few years. So there's still a risk of everybody else being exposed to H3N2 or one of the B strains later in the year, so January, February, March. So most provinces who are deferring the seasonal influenza vaccine are going to make it available after the pandemic vaccination program early in the new year. So I think I'll leave it at that. I do think this is a really important rationale that people need to know. There's a lot in the media about the studies, but the studies are one small part of it. And I think more importantly is what's making people sick and how do we best protect them from that. So I think we need to get the word out about the value of this vaccine, particularly for healthcare workers, because most of us are in the risk group for getting sick with this illness. And although most of us will not get terribly ill or end up in hospital, a small proportion of people will. And, it just doesn't pay to get sick in the first place. So I guess that's all I wanted to say for now, and I can certainly open it up for questions if there are any.
Well, I think there will be either over the phone or by email afterward. Does anyone have a question for Dr. Henry?
Bonnie, this is Marion Yepman. I wondered what would your recommendation be for people less than 65 years of age with chronic illnesses and for the seasonal flu?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing right now making people sick is the pandemic strain, so they should focus on getting immunized with the pandemic strain.
Would you recommend that they would have the seasonal vaccine at the present time?
I think if they were going into their doctor and were offered it, their physician should tell them the pros and cons of it. The thing is, I am concerned that people are going to think they're protected from what's causing influenza by getting the seasonal influenza vaccine right now, and the reality is they're not. So, yes, they can get the seasonal influenza vaccine at some point. Depending on the epidemiology where you are, if you're starting to see a lot of H3N2, then they should get it. But they need to have that discussion with their clinician about the pros and cons of it.
And some provinces have gone with different recommendations. How is that affecting the national strategy on immunization?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we're all similar. And we've had those discussions, and we wanted a pan-Canadian solution. But the reality is we don't have a pan-Canadian solution for seasonal influenza. Some people do risk groups. Some people have different risk groups. Some people, some provinces have universal programs. So I think it depends on knowing the population and knowing the circulating strains within your own jurisdiction.
Thank you.
I can say if you ask me if I get both immunizations, I absolutely would.
Well, hearing none, I presume that they will be able to email you afterward or email somebody to get the question, the answers that they're looking for. Thank you very much for that. I certainly appreciate you doing that at the last minute. And I appreciate you letting me put in the second to last slide.
Oh.
A couple of weeks ago on CBC Radio, I caught the very end of a wonderful interview with somebody who had a great voice for radio talking about a book. The book was Soap and Water and Common Sense, and the person who I was listening to was Dr. Bonnie Henry. And I have not been able to buy this book. Apparently, the day that you spoke on CBC, my local bookstore was sold out, and I have not yet been able to pick up a copy, although I'm looking forward to getting one. I just wanted to put that slide and the picture of that book in there and to let everyone know that it is available. I hope it's available in your local bookstore, and I'm looking forward to reading it. I'm sure it's a very good read. But thank you very much for that. The last slide, again, is the list of our sponsors, and I'll thank them again. But, Jerry, do you have anything you'd like to say in closing?
Not specifically, but, again, thank you very much, Paul, for hosting this Voices of Chica. We hope that everyone has found it to be very valuable information. We certainly appreciate having the opportunity to speak to our members on a regular basis.
Well, you are absolutely welcome. It's certainly my pleasure. Thank you very much for those comments. So thank you to Virox and Arjo and 3M Canada and Gojo and Deb. And thank you to all of you for joining us and staying with us for this hour, and to our speakers for their very well thought out presentations. And so thank you all, and we'll look forward to talking with you again very soon. Goodbye.